Hello there. Yes, welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, the real host, Joe Devine. Now, this is the first episode of a special series that's taking place over the summer called Joe Made Me Watch. So what is Joe Made Me Watch? Well, unfortunately, I'm very busy this summer due to the Soccer World Cup that's taking place in Mexico, Canada, and the USA. And so in my absence, while I'm unable to record podcasts with Adam, I've taken this opportunity to instruct him to watch five films simply because I said so. Now, this is a rare gem of an opportunity for me because Adam, it's quite difficult to get him to watch a film he doesn't want to watch, either because he thinks he won't like it or because he thinks it's not the right time for whatever reason. He's a stubborn, stubborn man. So when he came up with this idea, I was thrilled and I immediately began listing films that I thought I couldn't get him to watch in any other circumstance. So how does Joe Made Me Watch work? Well, I pick the film, I introduce it as I'm doing now, Adam goes away and watches it, comes back and talks about it, tells you whether he likes it or not, and then at the end, I come back to predict what I think Adam will score these films out of 100. And then we'll hear whether I was right or not. So that's it, Joe Made Me Watch. And today, Joe made me watch Lion. That's the Garth Davis directed, Dev Patel starring film Lion. Here's the IMDb, because I'm sure that Adam will give you the letterboxed when he begins to talk. A five-year-old Indian boy is adopted by an Australian couple after getting lost hundreds of kilometres from home. 25 years later, he sets out to find his lost family. Now, this film is from 2012, I think. Nope, that was completely wrong. It is from 2017. It was released 2017 in the UK, but 2016 in the US. It was an Oscar-nominated film. It was also famously, I think, one of the last films that Harvey Weinstein executive produced and released. It was a real commercial success as well. Had quite a small budget of around $12 million, and it had a slow open, but it grew and made a lot of money overall. So I saw this film when it was released. And since then, I would estimate that I've seen it about five times. So why did I ask Adam to watch it? Well, mainly because he's never seen it before. I really like it. Or at the very least, I really like watching it. I feel like there's a lot of truth in this film. Here's a few reasons why I love this film. And I wonder if Adam will bring these up or not. But these would be directions that I would point him in if we were doing the podcast together. The first is that I think it's very rare that a film that is split pretty much evenly in half, where the first half, there's a younger actor playing our protagonist, Saru, and in the second half, there's an older, more famous actor playing the same character. It's very rare that when that happens, that I, as a viewer, like both parts equally and don't feel cheated away. You know, I'm sure everyone listening to this will have had this experience at some point. They'll have been watching a film, you get about halfway through, and then it skips forward, you know, 10, 20 years in time, and there's new actors. And you feel somewhat cheated because you've grown to love these actors and the people that you're watching on screen. I don't feel like that in this film. I absolutely adore the small child that plays young Saru. But Dev Patel is so fantastic in this film, I completely believe that one character grows into the other. So I think it's a rare success that this film achieved that. I'd be curious if Adam picks up on that or if he agrees. The second thing is that I think one of the reasons I like this film so much is because the first hour, which is where Saru gets lost on the train, ends up in the big city, it very much reminds me of a classic high fantasy story, which is usually where a child or a young person is taken out of their familiar surroundings, dropped into somewhere they don't recognize and they don't understand. And, you know, the early parts of those stories are generally watching this young person or this child adapt to and evolve into their situation. There's a lovely scene after Saru has been on the streets for a couple of months where he finds this spoon. And he sits outside a cafe and he mimics a young man who's eating soup inside the cafe. And I think it's a very sweet scene because I believe that he's doing it because he's a child and he's playing. I also believe that there's something a little deeper there as well, that he's learned that maybe this is a way that you get food. This is a way to survive on the streets. So it really reminds me of the beginning of fantasy novels. And that's one of my comfort zones. And the final thing is that while I think the actual content of the story is relatively, at least unusual, is not something that ordinary people will have experienced, I think the emotional themes are very relatable. And that is to say that in the second half of the film, Dev Patel, who's playing an older Saru, is engrossed in the idea, becoming more and more engrossed with the idea of rediscovering where he was from, finding his home, finding his mum and his brother. And what we see is this repeated theme throughout that whole second half, where he feels guilty for not living in the present, for not living the life that he has been given by Nicole Kidman, who incidentally is fantastic in this film. And he feels guilty for not being able to remain in the romantic relationship that he's in with Rooney Mara. He tries to live in his new life, but he's dragged back to his old life over and over again. And I think, well, in his case, it's because he, you know, doesn't know where his family live, doesn't know where he's from, which is quite an extreme scenario. I think not being able to be in the present as a result of the past is a very relatable emotional situation. So I love this film. And while I recognize that it has its pitfalls, and I think it's a film that very, very much wants you to cry, it's super effective. And I believe that there is, you know, a real truth at the center of it. I'm very curious to hear whether Adam agrees. So I'm going to hand you over to Adam now. And when he's done talking, you'll come back to me to find out what I predict his score out of 100 will be. Okay, let's hear what Adam has to say.
Hello, Joe. I feel like I'm going to be talking to you, and this will be, I guess, an extended voice note of sorts, which I know people love. People love a voice note. Superb intro. I had all kinds of notions of introducing the episode and, you know, saying what the movie was about. I don't need to do any of that. So we can just get straight into it. This, as Joe said, is a movie of two halves, is Lion, and I'm going to talk about it like that, in two halves. It's very rare that I've sat down to watch a movie and it begins and I'm nearly on the edge of tears. This is how, like, powerfully the film begins. And it's all down to the casting of this little lad, this little young Saru, of who Joe speaks. He's played by Sonny Pawar, and he's a five-year-old kid, and it's him and it's his older brother. And they're knocking around Kandawar, and they're scraping a living, Nick and Cole. And already you think something bad's going to happen. No, you know, like, baked into the story what the film is, you know, at some point this little lad is gonna go missing, and he's gonna get ripped away from his family. And my son's 5 years old, so I'm immediately hooked. And this little kid who plays Saru is just amazing. And Garth Davis, he's just done a beautiful job of like putting you in this place. The kind of rich browns and their oranges there, and when later on you see young Saru in Calcutta, these kind of dirty yellows. There's loads of wide shots, and there are these big, I guess they're drone shots these days. In the old days, it would have been a helicopter of the landscape. And because, you know, at some point in the future, old Saru will be using Google Earth to try and track back where he's from. It's like, oh yeah, I see what you're doing. This is quite nice. But yeah, he doesn't like romanticize it, which is the best thing about it. It feels real. You feel like you're there. Everyone there feels like they're from this place in India. And that's really hard to do. So I'm completely engrossed in this first half of the flick. As soon as little Saru, you know, falls asleep on a train and hurtles 1,600 kilometres away from his mum, sister and brother, you're locked in. And so much of this first half is pure cinema. There's not a huge amount of dialogue. There's a looming sense of threat. But because Davis kind of shoots it from Saru's child height point of view, it never feels scary. Although there are kind of shocking, sudden, scary moments. There's a particularly horrible scene where he meets some other street children, and starts off with a lovely tender moment, where one of the kids lets Saru sleep with them, and then a brutal moment where some men are snatching up these children. It's horrible. But thankfully, you sort of then get to run away with your hero, and you don't have to follow what happens to the kids who get snatched. The film does really well walking the line between brutal reality and then not making you feel sick to your stomach about how horrible the world is. So that's nice. And yeah, it never falls into sentimentality. Even with that lovely little bit that Joe mentioned with the spoon, it's a nice moment, and you really get a sense that, yeah, Saru is doing that because he realises, that's my wife banging around. Joe's left me for the World Cup, but my wife hasn't left me. So, yeah, it's one of the great first halves of a movie I've seen in recent memory. But unfortunately, there is a problem. And it is a problem that generally in a movie, certain things have to happen for there to be a story. And this is based on a true story. So everything that happened in the true story will probably play out in the movie. So, you know, at some point, young Saru is going to get found and adopted. And it's still really compellingly done. And and Davis sort of gets around that. Sometimes he does a really nice little fake out where you think, oh, this is going to be the moment where Saru gets adopted, and then we're going to cut to the future. He gets picked up by a seemingly kind woman, and he gets a nice meal. She gives him a bottle of fizzy pop. It's probably my favourite sequence of the whole movie, because there's both sort of tenderness, warmth, compassion, but then this underlying sense of dread. There's such precariousness in little Saru's life. And what if he trusts the wrong person? What if he's in the wrong place at the wrong time? His life could be snatched away at any minute. These were my favourite notions that were knocking around the film. The film's not really interested in that too much. You get a little whiffs of it. I would love of it to have been more about that as a whole. But Saru at some point is going to find his way to being adopted. And there's that inevitability of it. And the first half is so strong, and Sonny Pawar is such a magnetic presence. I don't want him to get adopted. I want the whole film to stay with him. This like steely, wide-eyed kid, you know, who's surviving in the face of unbelievable uncertainty. I want the film to kind of throw out the source material and do something else. Unfortunately, we hit the midpoint, and it's bang on the midpoint, 50 mins in, and the film has to jump cut to grown-up Saru, has to get to Dev Patel. Dev Patel's on the poster. This is what the whole thing is about. This is what the story's going to be about. This is where everything's leading. And it's nice. It starts off beautifully. We've got this beautiful shot of the sea. Dev Patel, he's adrift in the sea. He's adrift in Tasmania, floating. He's got lovely, long surfer hair. And now we're into the search. You know, it's the who am I? And it's the journey back. And it's just not that interesting. Like the film, the glorious wide shot of the first half and all this kind of lively cinematography, it gets swapped for these really traditional close-ups. We're basically in a family drama. Very TV, and I can see why the director's done that. You know, there's like obviously a kind of a visual contrast of like, oh, here's India, here's Australia. I get it, but it's just you're stuck in these boring domestic Tasmanian rooms, and it's just a lot of hand-wringing. It's a lot of people staring into the distance. It's a lot of arguing. And yeah, it's a family drama. And I've seen it all before. And yeah, Dev Patel is pure charisma. But this is the first time, I mean, Joe loves him. And I've loved him from the few performances that I've seen. Monkey Man is fantastic. He's great in The Green Knight. But this is the first film where I watched him and I thought, oh, I think he's a movie star. Joe, I'm sorry, I don't think Dev Patel's an actor. I mean, he's obviously acting. But he's more like a Keanu Reeves with like actual talent. Not that he hasn't, I'm going to tie myself in knots. Not that Keanu hasn't got any talent. Dev Patel's got, he can do more with his face. But yeah, he's a movie star. And there's no real depth or meat to his character. Grown up Sonny, he just wants one thing. You know, it's him remembering who he was as a little kid, and he wants to get back home. And I just see him coasting on his charisma. And the film is stuck playing out the inevitable story beats that it has to play out. Like, these are the moments that have to happen, or there's no movie. And a few of them are done really well. There's a fantastic moment where he's gone around to a party. He's doing some hospitality course. He wants to work in the hotel trade for some reason. It doesn't really explain why. Maybe it doesn't have to. And there are other people from all over the world, and there are other people from India, but then there are other people who are Indian who are from Australia. And then there's Rooney Mara, who's obviously American. So anyway, he goes around this house party, and it's a traditional Indian meal that's getting made. And they've made jalebis, which I think there's some kind of sweet cookie type thing. And seated in the opening when he's young, he sees the jalebis and he tastes one, and that's it. That's his kind of Proustian Madeleine. It takes him back to the past. Superb scene. But in the main, Dev is just clicking on his laptop, and he's searching on Google Earth to try and find where his hometown is. And the film knows that's boring, and so they're kind of like, "Oh, what else can we do? Oh, I know. He can pin a big map on a wall, and he's kind of figured out there's a water tower he remembers seeing, and he's figured out how fast the train was going. He knows where he ended up, so he's kind of got some concentric circles about where he should be searching. And he's just clicking on Google Earth a lot. And it's just not cinematic or engaging. And you just know, like, every single scene is just the hero's journey. You know he's going to have to be driven to his lowest point. He's going to argue with his girlfriend. He's going to fall out with his family. He's going to not have a shower. It just feels a little bit rote. And however good Dev is, the part's just not there, and I think Dev's just coasting. And so, I mean, I might be being harsh. Joe's not going to like me saying this, because he liked both halves. I really don't understand how you can like both halves of this movie. The first half is amazing. The second half is just bog standard. The director seems bored that he even needs to hit these dramatic beats. That's some washing up getting done. He needs to hit these beats, and he needs to get to some low, because if Saru doesn't hit a low, then it's not going to be emotionally satisfying when he finally finds where he came from. Spoiler alert, of course he finds his mum. And that might seem a bit mean-spirited and nitpicky, but like when those scenes can be done more interestingly. And then also I think it's by the nature of making it, by making the memoir, they're sort of stuck. It made me think, like, I love to moan about how long a movie is, and I'll say, oh, that was 10 minutes too long, or that was 15 minutes too long. I think this movie's probably 15 minutes too long. Joe didn't tell us how long it is. It's 118 mins. Probably needs to be more like 110. As I was thinking that, it's not that it's too long. If the scenes were well done, it would earn being 118 minutes. You obviously need to spend a certain amount of time with grown-up Saru for it to pay off, but it just doesn't earn it. Anyway, when he reunites with the mum and sister, I'm getting back on the verge of tears. It works again. You're back where the film started, and maybe that time, the forgettable workman-like second half, those elements, maybe they needed to be there, so I'm starting to feel something. Unfortunately, all that good stuff is swiftly ruined with one of what I'd say is one of the worst final songs I've ever heard in a movie. Sia, who I quite like. I love that Chandelier song, Something About a Heart. But yeah, the song's called Never Give Up. And then they play pictures. They put up pictures of the real Saru and his real, and then the real Saru and the real mum are there, both mums, Tasmanian mum, and it just feels like the manipulation dial has just been cranked up out of nowhere, and it's so jarring because the first half of the movie has been so restrained and well judged. It's like, I can't help but think that one of the Weinsteins just foisted all of that shit on the end of the movie just to really blare in your face, feel something, this is emotional. It doesn't ruin it for me. It's just annoying. I mean, I would say if you are going to watch Lion, just switch it off. Just probably first, after Dev just hugs his mum, you can just like go click. Switch it off. I can't believe Joe's seen this 5 times, because a film I watch 5 times, there's got to be more comfort. I want a bit more comfort in a movie, and there's too much darkness and unsettling notions. You know, little kids getting snatched off the street. I imagine human trafficking, all the worst things you can think of. The film handles really well, but it makes you think about them. I don't want to think about that. You know, I want to put on Die Hard. I want to watch The Thing 5 times. I've watched that more than 5 times. I guess maybe Joe wants to feel something. It does make him feel feelings. It staggers me that I've already said this. It staggers me that he likes both halves. I think he loves the second half as much as the first because he loves Dev Patel so much. He also said that Kidman is fantastic. She's not. Her starness, her being a star, completely overpowers the role. She hugely over-eggs it. It's a pretty thin role in the first place. And she's on there because obviously it's a $12 million budget and her name's going to help sell the flick. She's got no right being in this movie. It should be Laura Linney or Emily Watson or Leslie Manville or like Toni Collette. I mean, Toni Collette wouldn't maybe do this. But like, these are the actresses I want to see in this role. I don't want to see Nicole Kidman. There was something about her that was really bugging me. I asked the Discord to chip in for any thoughts that I would bounce off of. And Patrick, he sort of said, it was mainly around Dev and Nicole Kidman. And Patrick said, it almost feels like Nicole Kidman is going through a renaissance right now and that Dev is long overdue for one. For the first part of that, I don't like the Kidman renaissance, this era that Kidman's in. I'm not really engaging with that. And I was thinking, like, why am I down on Kidman? I was like, maybe, you know, she's got quite narrow range generally. And has she been in anything good? I mean, she has been in very good. She's been in loads of really good stuff, and she's been quite good, nay, very, very good in some flicks. But she, in a very particular role, like Killing of a Sacred Deer, The Others, Dogville, Birth, Rabbit Hole, Margot at the Wedding. I think those are some of my more favourite performances of her, and they're all of a similar chilly, brittle woman who is... who's really struggling as her reality kind of crumbles around her. I mean, one of her great, great performances is Dead Calm in 1989. That's one of her early performances. Really, that's just a cracking fun flick, that. A couple on a boat, her and Sam Neill, and then a mad Billy Zane hops on. And then she's done loads of, like going through her Letterboxd list, or IMDb, if you want to go that way. She has had a very interesting career. She flits from big budget stuff like The Golden Compass, Australia, The Interpreter, Peacemaker. God, what else? Days of Thunder. That was pretty early. Far and Away, Batman Forever. Oh yeah, Practical Magic. And then she's in stuff like To Die For. And then she's in some sort of odd, offbeat stuff like Paperboy, which I never saw, which was a Lee Daniels flick, Stoker, and then a lot of prestige. She's done so much prestige stuff, Cold Mountain, this, The Railway Man, Grace of Monaco, Queen of the Desert. I don't know. I don't really think about it that much. Dev, though, Alfie on the Discord said, I'd also like to know if you like Dev in interesting indie flicks or if you'd like to see him get bigger Hollywood stuff, or I suppose a mixture of both. It's sort of surprising that he hasn't already been scooped up by some Marvel film. Could definitely see it happening, and while I'd happy before him, selfishly, I'm not sure I want that. The JonTron, also starring Dev, I'd chuck in Monkey Man. Thought it was a great action flick. Dev rocked it in the stoic, vengeful character type. Also Dev directed that. When I saw Monkey Man, I thought this is a superb calling card for James Bond. I think Dev Patel would make a superb James Bond. I don't imagine he'll get cast in it. Why hasn't he been scooped up by some Marvel film? Well, I don't know. And would I want him to? Robert Pattinson came out recently. He was chatting about The Batman. They're filming The Batman 2. And he said he was really surprised. He thought after The Batman, all these doors would be open to him and he'd be able to be in whatever he wanted. And it hasn't happened. I mean, sure, he's in The Odyssey. And sure, he's in Dune 3. But he's sort of suggesting it doesn't happen. And like Dev Patel hasn't even been in The Batman. I guess maybe The Green Knight would have been the closest big flick that he was in. But then that kind of got consigned straight to streaming, I would say. Got buried a bit. I don't want him to see him in a Marvel. I don't want to see him in a DC. I think that ship has sailed. But I'd love to see him in a big, meaty action flick, maybe a David Leitch. He'd do great stuff. But yeah, if you look at his list of flicks, he hasn't been in that much. And I think it's still early doors for the lad.
It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo. The ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened?
Victory! We had victory!
But in the end, it's only a passing thing. This shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it'll shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you. That meant something. Even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going. Because they were holding on to something.
What are we holding on to, Sam?
That there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo. And it's worth fighting for.
I like Joe's high fantasy note about Lion. That's quite sweet. There's almost the version of this flick that it has a little bit of magical realism in it, and I'm very glad that it doesn't have any of that shite in. I've got no time for magical realism whatsoever. Let's rate this flick out of 100, and then let's find out what Joe thinks I thought of it. I haven't rated anything out of 100 before. Now, the first half of this film is so powerful. It's got to be in the 70s. Obviously, it's got to be in the 70s. And for all the failings of the second half, it still ultimately pays off. So I think it's strong. And there's a number chiming in my head, and I'm going to say 77. It's a 77 from me. If someone asked, should I watch Lion? I'd say, yeah. It depends what mood you're in. It is quite watchable. You could just pop it on. It's not too depressing. It's quite uplifting. You're going to love the first half. You're going to watch one of the great kid performances of all time. I can't believe no one's talking about this kid performance at all. Sonny Powell, it's number one, really. Beats Macaulay Culkin into a cocked hat. But yeah, okay, well, let's throw to Joe. Let's see what he says. And then I'll do a final sting about what Joe thought of what I thought, and I'll laugh about him, and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay, I predict, on the basis of nothing, I've heard nothing yet, that Adam's score for Lion out of 100, and it'll be lower because than it should be, because his scoring systems are always weird. He gives a lot of films 3 or 3 out of 5. I think if it was a star rating, he'd be giving this a 3, maybe a 3.5 out of 5, if I'm lucky. So what does that equate to? That's around a sort of 65. I think I'm going to say he will give this film 69 out of 100. 69. I wonder how close I am. Back to you, Adam.
69? Jesus Christ. Who the fuck does he think I am? That's absolutely mental. Like, yeah, I did give it 3 stars. I'm not giving it 3.5. Like, I wouldn't. It's not, definitely not lower than 3. That's what, like, it's weird about then scaling that up. Like, what's a 3 equate 2 out of 100? It's not 69. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe some maths nerds can tell me what 3 scaled up it. But there's the nuances of the 3. I can give, not all 3s are equal in my eyes. You know, that's where the Letterboxd rating system falls down. You've got 3 all the way up to 3.4 for starters. It's, no, 69. I mean, Joe's fucked it. He's absolutely fucked it. I said 77. It's a 77. It's very decent. I mean, thinking about it, I forgot to say what I thought. Like, if you just saw the poster, it's got one of the worst posters. Never mind one of the worst ending songs. It's got one of the worst posters ever. It's just picture a close-up of Dev Patel, as gorgeous as he is. He's only the second half of the movie. I suppose he's the star. Although he was down as best supporting actor. He got a BAFTA for that, which I don't think he quite earned. It's got like it's white back sort of overlay on him. It's very white, and he's behind it. And then there's like a little kind of sun, little sun-like effect bursting in at the side. I guess that's the Tasmanian sun, or maybe the Indian sun. There, it's all the same sun. It's just wherever you are. And then there's a search bar over the bottom of his face. And as Green Bear 82 commented on my Letterboxd review, imagine seeing this poster for the first time, knowing nothing about the narrative. Now tell me what it's about. Yeah, abso-fucking-lutely. It's stupid. And yeah, I know the name Lion does pay off at the end, but I still don't know. I don't know why it's called. I know why it's called Lion, but when you start watching it, you're like, this is the dumb marketing version name of this movie. You didn't want to call it A Long Way Back because you didn't want people to think of The Hobbit. Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it's not the film's fault, but there's just the problem with watching movies is about expectation and what you think you're going to get. And then, like, knowing it's, you get it from the title, you get it from the poster, you get it from knowing what the plot is. You sit down watching this movie with those elements, you're like, okay, a little boy's going to get lost. But I also know nothing hugely bad's going to happen to him because he's going to grow up and get adopted. And he's going to then find his family. And also, he's obviously going to find his family because otherwise there's no movie. Like, the guy, you're not writing, you know, the real Saru Briley, he's not writing a book. Or maybe he is, actually. Maybe he is writing a book. He doesn't find his family. He just looks for ages. Are you publishing that book, do you think? You know, you're sitting in your office, you publish books, someone sends you a manuscript, you're reading it, and you're like, my God, this is such a powerful story. You're a five-year-old kid, you're in India, and you slept on a train, and then you ended up in Calcutta, and you were surviving on the streets, and, oh man, then you got adopted, and you got raised in a completely different country and culture and setting, and this notion of who you are, out of place, out of trying to move on, trying to build a life, but also yearning to connect and get back to where you came from, and you spend years on Google Earth trying to search, and you're reading the book, and then at the end it goes, yeah, and I still haven't found it, and then that's it, and that's the end. You're not making that. You're not publishing that. You're not making that into a movie. No one's. And, you know, unless, yeah, I've got massively, massively off topic. So, yeah, anyway, something inbuilt in the problem, you know, the problem of movies, and maybe it's the problem of me watching them. You can get in your own head and it will stop you really enjoying it. Joe, he's got the baby, he's got a clean brain, a clean baby human brain, and he can sit down and he can watch this five times, and he can just soak up the story and the emotion and enjoy it. But not me. 77.